Hello, and welcome to The Essential Reads. My name is Isaac, and my goal is to bring to you a bunch of classic audiobooks in an easy and accessible way. We are continuing with Huckleberry Finn, and we're kind of on the last chapter, but not really the last chapter. This is chapter 42 of the book, and my word, has it taken us a while to get here. But we're very, very near the conclusion of the book, so let's dive in. Do all the supporty stuff. Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. Chapter 42. The old man was up at town again before breakfast, but couldn't get no track of Tom. Both of them sat at the table, thinking and not saying nothing, and looking mournful, and their coffee getting cold, not eating anything. And by, the old man says, "Did I give you the letter?"
"What letter?"
"One I got yesterday out of the post office."
"No, you didn't give me no letter."
"Well, I must have forgot it." So he rummaged in his pockets, and then went off somewheres where he'd laid it down and fetched it and give it to her. She says,
"Why, it's from St. Petersburg. From Sis."
I allowed another walk would do me good, but I couldn't stir. But before she could break it open, she dropped it and run, for she see something. So did I. It was Tom Sawyer on a mattress, and that old doctor, and Jim, in her calico dress, with his hands tied behind him, and a lot of people. I hid the letter behind the first thing that come handy, and rushed. She flung herself at Tom, crying, and says,
"Oh, he's dead! He's dead! I know he's dead!"
And Tom turned his head a little, and muttered something or other, which he showed he wasn't in his right mind. She flung her hands and says,
"He's alive! Thank God! And that's enough!"
She snatched a kiss out of him and flew for the house to get the bed ready and scattering orders right and left at the neck and everybody else as fast as her tongue could go, every jump of the way. I followed the men to see what they was going to do with Jim, and the old doctor and Uncle Silas followed after Tom into the house. The men, they was huffy, and some of them wanted to hang Jim for an example to all the other niggas around there so they wouldn't be trying to run away like Jim done, making such a raft of trouble, keeping the whole family scared most to death for days and nights. But the others said, "Don't do it. It wouldn't answer at all. And he ain't our n***, and his owners would turn up and make us pay for him, sure." And that cooled him down a little, because the people that's always most anxious for to hang a n***, that ain't done just right, is always the very ones that ain't most anxious to pay for him when they've got their satisfaction out of him. And they cussed Jim considerable, though, and give him a cuff or two at the side of the head once in a while. But Jim never said nothing, and he never let on to know me. And they took him to the same cabin, and put his clothes on him, and chained him up again. Not to no bed leg this time, but to a big staple drove into the bottom log, and chained his hands, too, and both legs, and said he weren't to have nothing but bread and water to eat after this, till his owner come, or was sold at auction, because he didn't come in a certain length of time, and foot up our hole, said a couple of farmers with guns stand watch about the cabin every night, and a bulldog tied to the door in daytime. And about this time, they was through with the job, and was taping off with some kind of general goodbye cussing. And then the old doctor comes and takes a look and says,
"Don't be no rougher on him than you're obliged to, because he ain't a bad n***. When I got to where I found the boy, I couldn't cut the bullet out with some help, and it wasn't no condition for me to leave to go and get help. And he got a little worse and a little worse, and after a long time he went out of his head and wouldn't let me come near him again anymore. And said if I choked his wrath, he'd kill me, and no end of wild foolishness like that. And I see he couldn't do anything with him at all, so I says I got to have help somehow. And the minute I says it, out crawls the from somewhere, and says he'll help, and he done it too, and done it very well. Of course, I judged he must be a runaway. And there I was, and there I'd stuck right straight along all the rest of the day and all night. It was a fix, I tell you. I had a couple patients with the chairs, and of course I'd like to run up to town and see him, but I daren't, because the n***a might get away. And then I'd be to blame, and yet never a skiff come close enough for me to hail. So there I had to stick, plumb till daylight this morning, and I never see a n***a that was better than us nor faithfuler. And yet he was risking his freedom to do it, and was all tired out, too, and I see it plain enough he'd been worked main hard lately. I like the n***a for that, I tell you, gentlemen. A nigga like that is worth $1,000. And kind treatment, too. I had everything I needed. And the boy was doing as well there as he would have done at home. Better, maybe, because it was so quiet. But there I was, with both of them on my hands. And there I had to stick till about dawn this morning. And then some men in a skiff come by. And as good luck would have it, the nigger was sitting by the pallet with his head propped on his knees, sound asleep. So I motioned them in quiet, and they slid up on him and grabbed him and tied him before he knew what was about. And we never had no trouble. And the boy, being a kind of fight asleep too, we muffled the oars and hitched on the raft and towed her very nice and quiet. And the nigger never made least row nor said a word from the start. He ain't no bad nigger, gentlemen. That's what I think about him.
Somebody says, "Well, it sounds very good, Doctor. I'm obliged to say." Then the others softened up a little, and I was mighty thankful to that old doctor for doing Jim that good turn. And I was glad it was according to my judgment of him, too, because I thought he had a good heart in him and was a good man the first time I seen him. Then they all agreed that Jim had acted very well and was deserving to have some notice taken of it and a reward. So every one of them promised right out and hearty they wouldn't cuss him no more. And then they come out and locked him up. I hope they was going to say he could have one or two of his chains took off, because they was rotten heavy, and could have meat and greens with his bread and water. But they didn't think of that, and I reckon it weren't best for me to mix in. But I judged I'd get the doctor's yarn to Aunt Sally, somehow or other, as soon as I got through the breakers that was laying just ahead of me. Explanations, I mean, of how I forgot to mention about Sid being shot when I was telling him and me put in that drafted night paddling around and hunting the runaway. But I had plenty of time. Aunt Sally, she stuck me to the sick room all day and night, and every time I see Uncle Silas mooning around, I dodged him. The next morning, I heard Tom was a good deal better, and they said Aunt Sally was gone up to get a nap. So I slips in the sick room, and if I found him awake, I reckon I could put up a good yarn for the family that would wash. But he was sleeping, and sleeping very peaceful, too, and pale, not fire-faced the way he was when he come. So I sat down and laid for him to wake. In about half an hour, Aunt Sally comes gliding in. There I was, up a stump again. She motioned me to be still, and sat down by me, and began to whisper, and said we would all be joyful now, because all the symptoms was first rate, and they'd be sleeping like that ever so long, and looking better and peacefuler all the time. And 10 to 1 he'd wake up in his right mind. So there we sat, watching. And by, he stirs a little, and opens his eyes, very natural, and takes a look, and says,
"Hello. Why am I at home? How's that? Where's the raft?"
"It's all right," I says. "And Jim?" "The same," I says. But I couldn't say it pretty brash. But he never noticed, but says, "Good, splendid. Now we're all right and safe. Did you tell Annie?" I was going to say yes, but she chipped in and says,
"About what, Sid?"
"Why, about the way the whole thing was done."
"What whole thing?"
"Why, the whole thing. There ain't but one. How we set the runaway nigger free. Me and Tom."
"Good lay. Set the run. What's the child talking about? Out of his head again."
"No, I ain't out of my head. I know all what I'm talking about. We did set him free, me and Tom.
We laid out to do it. We done it.
And we done it elegant, too." He got a start, and she never checked him up. Just sat, stared and stared. Let him clip along. And I see it weren't no use for me to put in. "Why, Annie, it cost us a power of work. Weeks of it. Hours and hours every night whilst you was all asleep. We had to steal candles, and the sheet, and the shirt, and your dress, and spoons, and tin plates, and case knives, and the warming pan, and the grindstone, and flour, and just no end of things. You can't think what work it was to make the saws and pens and inscriptions and one thing or another. And you can't think half the fun it was. And we had to make up pictures of coffins and things, and anonymous letters from the robbers, and get up and down the lightning rod, and dig a hole in the cabin, and make the rope ladder, and send it cooked in a pie, and send in spoons and things to work with in your apron pocket.
Mercy sakes!
And load up the cabin with rats and snakes and so on for company for Jim. And then he kept Tom here so long with the butter in his hat that he come near to spilling the whole business, because the man come before he was out of the cabin and we had to rush. And I got my share, and we dodged out of the path and let him go by. And when the dogs come, they weren't interested in us, but went for the most noise. We got to our canoe and made for the raft, and all was safe. And Jim was a free man, and we done it all by ourselves. Wasn't it Bully Annie?
Well, I never heard the likes of it in all my born days. So it was you, little rapscallions, that's been making all this trouble and turned everybody's wits clean inside out and scared us almost to death. As good a notion as ever I had in my life to take it out of you this very minute. To think, here I've been, night after night, and you just get well once, you young scamp, and I'll lay the tan of old Harry out in both of you.
But Tom, he was so proud and joyful, and he just couldn't hold in, and his tongue just went it. She, a chirping in and spitting fire all along, and both of them going at it once, like a cat conversation. And she says,
well, you get all the enjoyment you can out of it now, for mind I tell you, if I catch you meddling with him again...
Meddling with who? Tom says, dropping his smile and looking surprised.
With who? Why, the runaway nigger, of course. Who'd you reckon?
Tom looks at me very grave and says, Tom, didn't you just tell me he was all right? Hasn't he got away?
Him?
Says Aunt Sally.
The runaway indeed he hasn't. They got him back safe and sound, and he's in that cabin again on bread and water, and loaded down with chains till he's claimed or sold.
Tom rose square up in bed, his eyes hot, and his nostrils opening and shutting like gills. And sings out to me, they ain't got no right to shut him up. Shove! And you don't lose a minute. Turn loose. He ain't no slave. He's as free as any critter that walks this earth.
What does the child mean?
I mean every word I say, Aunt Sally. And if somebody don't go, I'll go. I knowed him all his life, and so was Tom there. Old Miss Watson died 2 months ago, and she was ashamed she was ever going to sell him down the river, and said so. So she set him free in her will.
Then what on earth did you want to set him free for, seeing as he was already free?
Well, that is a question, I must say. And just like women. Why, I wanted the adventure of it. I'd have waded neck deep in blood to...
Goodness alive!
Aunt Polly! And if she weren't standing right there, just inside the door, looking as sweet and contented as an angel half full of pie, I wished I may never. Aunt Sally jumped for her. I most hugged the head off her and cried over her. And I found a good enough place for me under the bed, for it was getting pretty sultry for us, seemed to me. And I peeped out, and in a little while, Tom's Aunt Polly shook herself loose and stood there, looking across at Tom over her spectacles. Kind of grind him into the earth, you know? And then she says,
yes, you better turn your head away. I would if I was you, Tom. Oh, dear me,
says Aunt Sally.
Is he changed so? Why, that ain't Tom, it's Sid. Tom's... What? Where's Tom? He was here a minute ago. You mean, where's Huck Finn? That's what you mean. Reckon I ain't raised such a scamp as my Tom all these years not to know when I see him? That would be pretty howdy-do. Come out from under the bed, Huck Finn.
So I done it, but not feeling brash. Aunt Sally, she was one of the mixed, upsettest-looking persons I ever see. Except one, and that was Uncle Silas when he come in, and they told it all to him. It kind of made him drunk, as you may say. And he didn't know nothing at all the rest of the day, and preached a prayer meeting and sermon that night that gave him a rattling reputation, because the oldest man in the world couldn't have understood it. So Tom's Aunt Polly, she told all about who I was and what. And I had to up and tell how I was in such a tight place that when Mrs. Phelps took me for Tom Sawyer, she tipped in and says,
oh, go on and call me Aunt Sally. I'm used to it now. There ain't no need to change.
And that when Aunt Sally took me for Tom Sawyer, I had to stand it. There weren't no other way. And I knowed he wouldn't mind, because it would be nuts for him, being a mystery, and he'd make an adventure out of it, and be perfectly satisfied. And so it turned out, and he let on to be Sid, and make things as soft as he could for me. And his Aunt Polly said Tom was right about old Miss Watson setting Jim free in her will. And so, sure enough, Tom Sawyer had gone and took all that trouble and bother to set a free nigger free. And I couldn't ever understand before, until that minute, that talk, how he could help a body set a nigger free with his bringing up. Well, Aunt Polly, she said that when Aunt Sally wrote to her that Tom and Sid had come all right and safe, she says to herself,
look at that now. I might have expected it. Let him go off that way without anybody watching. So now I got to go and traipse all the way down the river, 1,100 mile, and find out what that critter up to this time. as long as I couldn't seem to get no answer out of you about it. Well, I never heard nothing from you, Aunt Sally says. Well, I wonder. Why, I wrote you twice to ask you what you could mean by Sid being here. Well, I never got him, sis.
Aunt Polly, she turns slow and severe and says,
You, Tom.
Well, what? He says, kind of pettish.
Don't you what me, you imprudent thing. Hand out them letters.
What letters?
Them letters. I'll be banned if I had to take a hold of you.
They're in the trunk. There, now. They're just the same as they was when I got them out of the office. I ain't looked into them. I ain't touched them. But I know they'd make trouble. And I thought if you weren't in no hurry, I'd...
Well, you do need a skinning. There ain't no mistake about it. And I wrote another one to tell you I was coming. I suppose he... No, it come yesterday. I ain't read it. But it's all right. I got that one.
I wanted to offer to bet $2 she hadn't, but I reckon maybe it was just as safe not to, so I never said nothing.
Thank you so very much for listening. If you enjoyed, please like, comment, share, all that jazz, and if you really enjoyed, do subscribe, because there is more to come. And if you're listening on podcast, do all the podcasty things. Leave a review, share it with your mates, and if you just want to support on either platform in any way that is more direct, you can go to the Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you will have access to exclusive audiobooks. We have one chapter to go, and I will see you in a couple days to finish the book. Thank you once again, and bye-bye.